Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on. Alfredo Arteaga. I have Chris Kaufman here. I have Simon Clancy here after a 2-week hiatus. He's back. Where were you, Simon?
I had an ear infection, actually. I found out a couple of days ago I've got a perforated eardrum, which isn't great. So,
What?
Exactly. So for somebody that works in audio, as I do, losing my hearing is probably not the best future plan for me. So, I went to the doctor's on Saturday, and he showed me, he stuck some camera in my ear. My eardrum has a hole wider than the Dolphins' run defense, so it's pretty big. So that's kind of where I've been. I couldn't hear shit last week, and I've got like a buzzing in my ear. But I'm back. I'm here. I was here in spirit. Plus, I was getting loads of grief from some guy on our Twitter account because apparently I had a gap between my teeth. I've got a gap between my teeth, which clearly causes this guy a massive issue. And then somebody else said something. He kept going on about a Brit box. I have no idea what a Brit box was or is, in fact. And also, Brit, if he meant British, he was spelling Brit with 2 T's. But he was really fat and needed to lose weight, so it was fine. So it was easy to put him away. But anyway, I'm here now. I mean, you know, what's the fuss about?
Well, we did learn in these last 2 weeks is that you have fans.
Oh, I'm well aware of that one.
People that absolutely despise you.
I mean, I don't care. I mean, I wonder why it is. Do you think it's the accent?
It's probably the accent.
I think we need to invest in this Brit box, though, because
yeah, definitely.
What I imagine it'll do is we could hook it up, and if Simon is out again, then we could plug it in, and one of us is now Simon.
What I think would be cool is that the people that despise me, next time in the States, if they actually had the front to come up and say it to me, then then we'll have a conversation. But, I mean, the internet makes strong men out of lots of people, so it's fine.
Yeah, I'll tell you who is not despised, and that's our very own Chris Kaufman, who made his debut on 5ReasonSports.com. And everybody and their mother read that Gasecki piece. I'll be honest with you, I did not read it.
Are you two going to get married?
Everybody except Alf.
Yes.
To be honest, I didn't read it either, buddy.
If you could give us a very brief synopsis of what the piece was about, Chris.
I don't do brief.
I'm going to take a nap while this answer happens.
You go take care of that perforated eardrum, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. I might reply to some nice tweets talking about how like fat blokes from Opa-locka really don't like me because my accent or some shit, I don't know.
In all seriousness, we've talked about almost everything that was in that piece we've talked about on the show before, so if you're a listener on the show, then you probably have already heard the better part of it. It's just a general rundown of how the Dolphins drafted two guys, second round and fourth guy. It was not just about Gasicki, although I mainly ended up making it so, but they drafted two guys in the second and fourth rounds, and then they just didn't use them. They didn't use them the way that they're supposed to be used. And it, you know, you could really compare it to 2010 when the Patriots drafted two guys in the second and fourth rounds and two tight ends. They're both, you know, one of them was a classic Y and one of them was a, you know, more of a joker or an F, and just like Miami did. And they just had a completely different level of commitment to them as a coaching staff. And so you want to talk about this disconnect idea. What does it look like when people talk about disconnect between the front office and the coaches? That's it. You know, in 2010, the New England Patriots doubled their usage of multiple tight end personnel on the field after they drafted Gronkowski and Hernandez in the second and fourth rounds. Miami drafted Gasicki and Durham Smith in the second and fourth rounds in 2018, and their use of multiple tight end personnel actually went down It was, you know, in one of the smallest numbers really in the league. And which is all the more ridiculous because Gesicki, the headliner, is a guy that needs to be in there on multiple tight end personnel. He's not a guy that works as well in 11 personnel as your only tight end on the field with three wide receivers. If you have, it's basically like having four wide receivers, which just puts a ton of pressure on your quarterback because now you don't have as many options for blitz pickup and certainly as many options to run an effective ground game out of that sort of personnel. So he was never destined to be able to be used in 2018 if Adam Gase was going to stay religiously devout toward 11 personnel, which he did.
Among all the feedback you got on that article, some of it was not as positive, I would say.
Who?
And there were many. There were many that were just saying that, well, they took your piece as being a little bit too rosy, and they were just saying, you know, one of them is Omar Kelly. Mike Gesicki just does not like physicality. And essentially what Omar Kelly was saying is, give up on Mike Gesicki, it's over. What do you say to those people? In essence, what do you say to Omar Kelly?
Well, I just think that's reductive to talk about, you know, he's just not physical enough. You don't need to write an article about that. And no, that he plays a position before he'd even played a down with Miami, before he'd even been in training camp, really. The coaching staff already said what he is. They said he's an F, you know, that he is that type of tight end. He's not a Y. And if you're going to use an F in your offense, there's a certain way that you have to do it. And Miami was not committed to using the personnel groupings that would be compatible with that. So there was already a disconnect happening before he had played a down of football for the Miami Dolphins in the preseason or in training camp. And so there was already that disconnect happening, and that deserves being explored. That deserves being written about. If you want to be thorough and detailed and you don't want to be overly reductive, then yeah, you should probably explore that. Is it all over for Mike Gesicki? I mean, listen, I was as turned off by some other people with some of the things that we saw last year. Is he ever going to be a real why? You know, like if you wanted a Rob Gronkowski, you're never going to get that. If you want somebody that's a little bit closer to like a Zach Ertz who also can't block his way out of a wet paper bag, then yeah, you know, then maybe you still got a shot there if you use him the right way. You know, the Philadelphia Eagles took their guy Dallas Goedert in second round, who's often compared to Mike Gesicki. And what did they do? They immediately pumped up their use of multiple tight end personnel. And except in this case, Goedert is the guy that is a real Y, whereas Zach Ertz, you know, to be sort of more of the move guy, and it unlocked both of them. They got good production out of both of them. Miami clearly beyond Miami last year, or at least that coaching staff that Miami had, unfortunately. And it was
also
just,
let's not forget that
it was always a tease, though.
Let's not forget that the Dolphins also decided that it would be in the best interests of both the team and of Mike Gesicki to make him learn every single position. So not only did he learn his tight end position, he was learning the H-back position, he was learning a sort of hybrid fullback position, he was learning the slot, and he was learning the both boundary receiver positions.
And the true why.
Exactly. And it's difficult enough for a tight end as a rookie to come in anyway. But when you're trying to learn 5, 6, 7 positions on the hoof, learn how to be a better blocker and do your own job, it's not an impossible task. So whether or not they were setting him up for future years, or, I mean, I assume that must be what it was, because obviously if he comes on the field and he can't block, then you're obviously tipping your hat to the defense already in terms of what you're going to be doing. But, you know, he was... he was behind the eight ball, should we say, I think, from the get-go. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out when he's hopefully freed up a bit more, which it looks like the signing of Dwayne Allen is going to free him up to do a lot more in the receiving game, which can only be a good thing. And I wrote on our social media that I believe he will ultimately end up being the sort of Aaron Hernandez of this offense in terms of, you know, wasn't a particularly, you know, wasn't necessarily going to smash you in the mouth as a blocker, but would get down the field as a seam buster and, you know, somebody that would get open and hopefully, you know, make plays in the red zone, which is what we're going to need if we're going to, you know, win more than two or three games, which I don't think we are. But anyway, that's for another conversation.
If he's going to bust out, at least let him do it, you know, in the way that
doing
what he does best. And he's just, his best isn't good enough. You know, his, what he is as a player just isn't good enough. And maybe that's the case. I mean, that's, I'm not saying, I'm not declaring anything victory wise on Mike Gesicki, certainly. But let's at least set it up so to do what he was drafted to do. And then we'll find out. We'll begin to find out. And I think learning all those positions was too much for him. And it was trial by fire. And, you know, it just didn't work out.
Sometimes a Ferrari is just a Ferrari. I'm not saying he's a Ferrari, but it's the first car that came to my head. And if you want to go off-roading, then don't use the Ferrari. Buy a Jeep. Right. Do you know what I mean? If you want to drive on the road and drive off-road, then find a suitable car. If you just want to drive fast on the streets, by the Ferrari. I think that's kind of where we were with Gesicki and where we will be moving forward. So you just got to do what he does best to maximize his ability. And hopefully, as I said, hopefully Chalochet will do that.
I will say that I put together all of his targets from last year. When you really stack it up, it's a little bit surprising, actually. I didn't remember there being that much positive on there, to be honest. When I stacked it all up and looked at it, you know, he was getting open. He was creating separation physically, you know, against linebackers, using his strength and using his hands against defensive backs, using his strength in his hands. Everybody that says that he's got no balance whatsoever, that he runs like a, you know, baby giraffe or something like that. Like on that particular tape of 31 targets, that was not the case. On maybe some of the other routes, certainly he got knocked off balance. I saw several times this year, but it was a pretty good tape, actually. And he's one of the only tight ends, PFF came up with this, among the guys that had at least 30 targets, he was one of only two guys that caught every single one of the catchable balls, which means that he presented an open target for himself when the ball was thrown to him, to where he could pull it down. So it was never, you know, knocked down by the defensive back or knocked down by the linebacker or something like that. Every time it was catchable, he caught it. So there's something there. We'll see.
Well, that's an endorsement. There's something there. That's, you know, that was an endorsement for Mike Gesicki. But yeah, like Simon said it many times on the podcast last year, year one of a tight end, rookie tight end. You know, don't expect too much. If he's great right off the bat, then who knows? You probably have yourself a Hall of Famer. But you had to have a little bit of patience. And I'm not ready to, you know, just throw him in a trash can and say, okay, it's over. We drafted a bust. Like, I want to see more. I want to see him develop. I want to see how he does in an offense that's probably going to suit him a lot better.
Yep.
All right. Well, we had some news, didn't we, Chris?
You
told me that we signed three players, and I was like, really, we did?
Considering it's the first week of, I guess now the second week, technically, of April, and the draft is still 2-3 weeks away, you know, it's supposed to be a pretty dead time, and then all of a sudden the Dolphins signed three players today. I thought it was interesting. And two of them I find to be interesting, but, you know, they might not be the same two as everybody else. So what they did is they signed probably the headliner is really Jayron Elliott of from the AAF, the now defunct AAF, officially defunct.
It's a shame.
He was probably the most coveted asset coming out of the AAF. And I don't say that, you know, I don't say that to exaggerate or, you know, as a homer or anything like that. He was probably the most coveted guy coming out of there. He had a ridiculous pass rush rate or pressure rate coming out of there. He had 7.5 sacks. He got to the quarterback for a sack like 10 times. He caused he did a lot of strip sacks. He looked fantastic over there, and he has looked fantastic in the past with the NFL. I mean, this is not a guy that's new to the NFL. He was with the Green Bay Packers for 4 years. He went off to the New Orleans Saints last year in 2018 and had training camp and preseason with them. So he's been around the NFL. The reason he hasn't caught on, I think, is because he's regarded as sort of a pure pass rusher. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those guys have a stigma, like there are defenses that are like, well, that's just not for me. And Cameron Wake faced that same stigma when he came into the league.
Yeah, they have that reputation as a specialist.
Yeah, initially with the New York Giants, he didn't even make it to training camp with the New York Giants. And then when the Dolphins got him from the CFL, you know, there was a stigma associated with that, even on our own team in 2009, he was having ridiculous success. And they still, you know, they still kept him on the bench and didn't play him that much. There's a stigma associated with those pure pass rushers. And sometimes you see those guys take a little time to get going in their career. I'm thinking of guys like Jerry Hughes, who was initially declared a draft bust. I'm thinking of guys like Brandon Graham, who was initially declared a draft bust. Cameron Wake was initially, you know, he wasn't really a bust because he was a UDFA in the first place, but certainly never going to be an NFL guy. Sometimes a little bit later.
You just mentioned three out of the top five pass rushers.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like the top pass rushers in the NFL as far as effectiveness at getting to the quarterback. And early in their careers, they were considered busts because they're sort of like pure speed, pure pass rush types. And, you know, you can throw in a Mario Addison in there or somebody like that, too. I think that there's a stigma associated with them, and sometimes it's hard to fight through that. But I think Jaron Elliott is getting to the point now where his pass rush is so compelling that he might be ready to break through that barrier. And we'll see. And the other point that I made that I think is worth noting is a guy like this that gets started this late in his career, he's always going to be a little bit underpaid. You know, even when he gets to the free agent status and he's trying to cash in, he's always going to be a little bit underpaid because he's behind. He doesn't have the same pedigree, doesn't have the same, you know, age as other guys that are reaching the free agent market. So it could be, you know, the potential is good if he works out. If he doesn't work out, then, you know, nothing lost. I think the Dolphins did a good thing to go ahead and sign the most coveted player from the AAF, basically.
Well, I think he showed some early promise as well, didn't he, with the Packers and the Cowboys. I think probably yeah. Keith Reese at the Orlando corner and Gilbert, the kid who signed with the Browns, and Elliott were the three kind of standout performers, really, in terms of, I think Reese ended up signing with the Chiefs. But, you know, look what he's up against in terms of making that. Obviously, there are going to be more players to sign. You figure that we'll, you know, add probably two defensive end type players, and then a number of undrafted free agents. But in terms of, you know, there's four guys on the roster at the moment. Charles Harris is flattered to deceive completely. Tank Carradine, you know, who's been a blowout. We all liked him coming out, but injuries have slowed him down. And then you're looking at, you know, Jeremiah Valoaga and Jonathan Woodard. And that is it. You know, so he's got a real shot at making the team in terms of, you know, you kind of figure like these AAF guys are going to, you know, end up being sort of camp fodder and late cuts or whatever. But actually he, as much as anybody, stands a significant chance of making this team and being a valuable contributor at some point.
And if you were just to stack up his time in the NFL with Green Bay, as you say, and some, whether it be his preseason work with the Saints or preseason work with the Green Bay Packers, or the regular season work he did with the Green Bay Packers. If you stacked it up against Charles Harris's pass rush work, I'm sorry, but Jaron Elliott's pass rush is more compelling than Charles Harris's. And, you know, I don't mean that to denigrate Charles Harris this early in his career, because obviously he's still young and still developing, but that is what it is. And certainly what Elliott showed in the AAF this season, you know, a couple months ago, is very compelling. 20% pressure rate is highly compelling. You saw him being brought on the field by his team in pass rush situations, largely as a right outside linebacker, but you know, sometimes also on the left side. And just his ability to get after the passer and strip sacks, and you know, he's got such good flexibility, and he's just a really compelling player. So I think they won that one. Alf, I don't know if you have any thoughts on him. You said you didn't really know these guys that well.
Oh, I watched them play. Yeah, there were guys that I was intrigued by, but the one that I really wanted was Wolford, and I don't know if he's signed anywhere yet. That's the Arizona Hotshots quarterback.
The QB, you know, I don't think he has now. Yeah.
And I suspect Miami wouldn't get into that game at all until after the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because they're also interested in that guy from Utah. His name, Troy Williams.
Yeah, and Troy Williams.
Yeah, he is not going to be in the draft. Like, everybody thinks he'll be a draft pick or a UDFA. He's not going to be in the draft. He's already technically been in the draft. So he'd be free to sign right now. If Miami's interested in him, they could sign him right now. But I don't think they're going to do anything there until after the draft, because the first thing, they've already got three guys, right? They've already got three quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So the first thing they're going to do is –
but they really don't have any.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, the first whack at the bat is going to be in the draft. If they draft a guy wherever they do, that's going to be their fourth arm. If they don't, then, okay, maybe they're going to circle back around to guys like John Walford or Troy Williams. But right now, it's just going to be after the draft.
Can we just very briefly address, before we get into the defensive and offensive linemen, can we just address what Peter King said in his article today about Dwayne Haskins being the big faller? And in terms of, because, you know, this is the thing that really gets people excited in terms of quarterbacks, and because it was a very interesting piece from Albert Breer today as well. Breer said teams are very much evaluating drafts in certainly at the quarterback position in terms of not just 1 year anymore. They're looking at 2 and potentially 3 years in terms of how you would rank quarterbacks across the across 2 and 3 years, given the strength of future classes, and weighing up whether or not, for example, 2019 matches up with 2020 and those sorts of things. What do we think about King and Haskins? Chris, you and I have long talked for 20 years about the pre-draft smoke machine. Where do we feel like this is in terms of how close to the nozzle of the smoke machine are we right now?
We're getting pretty close, it feels like. It's hard. It's hard to take any of that stuff, whether it was, you know, him for sure going to the Giants, or, you know, now all of a sudden, oh, he's falling, he's the fourth quarterback. It's hard to know where to take any of that. I think, you know, you and I have our own sort of qualms with Dwayne Haskins, especially, you know, where does he stack relative to the guys next year that we know are going to be in the class? And then, of course, the guys that kind of come out of nowhere and tend to go at the top anyway. You know, is he that good? Is he not that good? I think that if he does fall to 13, I would be at least a little bit surprised if the Miami Dolphins ended up passing on him. And that's just a matter of fit. You know, a matter of fit with these coaches, the success that they had with a pocket passer who, you know, basically played the game a lot like Dwayne Haskins does. And so if they're not in for that, then I think it's certainly an indictment on what they think of Dwayne Haskins sort of off the field in terms of personality, work ethic. Is he the guy to really lead your locker room? Is he the, you know, is he the guy? Because we talked about it before. I mean, he showed up that pro day and he was huffing and puffing, putting his hands on his hips and, yeah, and sucking wind like 5 minutes into the throwing session. It was really bizarre. It looked like he had the flu. You know, and so what does that say about his physical work ethic? I mean, we know what his mental work ethic is like, but what does it say about
it? It tells you that as soon as he stepped off the field at Ohio State, he started eating and not really caring much about his body is what it says.
Because he showed up at the combine kind of a little bit chubby and a little bit slow.
Puffy and heavy. Yeah.
He was a bit fat, wasn't he?
Yeah.
On the same subject, can I just read to you a statement that Jack Del Rio has said within the last hour? Don't be surprised when we line up for the season next year if Russell Wilson is quarterbacking somewhere else. Now Jack Del Rio obviously has worked with Wilson.
Don't get me excited.
Now we're talking.
Where do we stand on that? Because it does feel that it's April 15th right? I would not be at all surprised if Wilson was traded somewhere before the draft. That April 15th cutoff that he set is obviously, I mean, I think Seattle have two picks in the first four rounds. I think I would not be surprised to see it happen if they were to deal him away. Potentially, the New York Giants, for example, the Oakland Raiders, the Miami Dolphins. I mean, who knows? Yes. I would not be surprised to see him traded before the draft.
Well, it's very much like the Dwayne Haskins situation. The reason you draft Dwayne Haskins at 13 is possibly out of fear that you pass him up. He goes and produces somewhere else. You pass him up for some quarterback, 2020 quarterback to be named later. And let's say Haskins produces somewhere else. You draft your guy in 2020 and he busts. It pretty much gets everybody fired in this, not only the front office, but the coaching staff as well.
The Buffalo Bills are being panned for exactly that. They dealt the pick that Patrick Mahomes was picked at to the Kansas City Chiefs.
So it's really the fear. It's the gamble and the fear. Now, Russell Wilson is a different case. If Russell Wilson manages to play quarterback anywhere else for lesser assets than what we are capable of trading, that's a problem. And I'm talking about it's a serious problem because he's an elite quarterback. He's a top five quarterback. He has plenty of time. A lot of people like to point to, oh, my God, he's going to turn 31 next year. Yeah, so what? You know, he's going to be an effective quarterback for the next 6, 7, 8 years.
He's got 10 years. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, who cares that he's going to be 31? He's still an effective quarterback. He's an elite quarterback. Yes, and like I said so on the podcast, and I said it online on Twitter. I'm pretty open to trading a lot for Russell Wilson.
And I know that people are going to say,
I would give up 3 first-round picks for him. Okay. And I would do it to absolutely guarantee myself Russell Wilson. You know what it means? Just draft better in the second round going forward to fill out the team around him. And you are going to have a lot of cap space next year too. So not only can you pay Russell Wilson going forward, you could, you know, fill in around him to help him.
Yeah, that's the thing that I would get to is that a lot of people would say about that idea, that's a horrible idea just because you'd have to give up all those draft assets. And then in addition to it, he's going to get the biggest contract ever given to an NFL player, which he certainly is. And I get that. I really do get that.
Yeah, the problem, I agree that Miami, it sounds desperate, you know, but hello, we are, you know.
Well, but Miami, the point to make is that Miami doesn't have anybody to spend that money on right now. I mean, they have $120 million reported in cap space scheduled for 2020, and God only knows what they have on the books for 2021. So they have a lot of cap space scheduled for the next couple of years and nobody to spend it on. You know, that's the thing. Like, cap space does you no good if you have nobody to spend it on.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't have anybody to spend it on and then Russell Wilson comes up and you're like, well, you know, maybe that's a good place to spend it. Yeah, that works. That works for me. I'll take that. By the way, the Dolphins also signed a Brazilian defensive tackle. Derval Neto. Yeah.
He's part of the international program, isn't he? The one that's
right.
So there's been a British rugby player called Christian Wade who played at a very high level as a professional rugby player over here, signed with the Buffalo Bills. And it's part of that international program in which people like OC Uminura, OC Works is part of the group of international scouts, I suppose, who go to different countries and try and find players, and they go to a sort of an international combine. And then each team has one of the international players on their practice squad. So there's an English guy on the Atlanta Falcons practice squad, a tight end called Alex Reed, I think. But there's a number of, you know, the big wide receiver that the Vikings drafted in the 7th round a couple of years ago. Yeah, exactly. He was one of those international guys. So I strongly suspect our Brazilian tackle doesn't make I mean, look at our offensive line. He'll probably start 16 games, frankly. But, you know, for most of the teams.
We're not sure what he's going to play, whether it's defense. He played defensive tackle in Brazil. We'll see what he plays. I think there's sort of historical precedent for moving to the offensive line, especially with, you know, Pat Flaherty having coached Chris Reed, who was a shot putter. And certainly it's been in the experience of the New England Patriots with Stephen Neal, who was a wrestler, had very little football experience before they made him a starting guard, really. So we'll see what that is. I will say this, you know, kudos to them in this way. The NFL has set up these advantageous rules to where you can have an 11th player on your practice squad all year if it's one of these international players. And kudos to them for going out and getting the guy that I'm told by somebody who professionally evaluates exactly these players for NFL teams and for professional teams. I'm told that he was by far the best in the international group of players, the most compelling. So yeah, I mean, he's 308 pounds, 6'3", and he ran a 7.09 cone. That's ludicrous, absolutely ridiculous. And he can do a backflip and all that, and clearly against all those other Brazilians out there, he looked like
he's a Bobo store Kalen Saunders.
yeah.
What if Albert Breer saying that we're one of the four teams that have touched base with the Cardinals regarding Josh Rosen, ourselves, Washington, the Giants, and the Chargers?
I think that's about Kyler Murray, to be honest with you. Doesn't that sound like we're you know, prying about to see what they're thinking and if Kyler Murray is actually going to go number one? Because if he doesn't, all types of possibilities open up for us.
Because all of us have heard separately that we're out on Josh Rosen, right? The Dolphins are out on Josh. They don't like –
I don't think that the Dolphins are in on Kyler Murray. I mean, they would be if he was there, but let's be realistic. He's not going to get anywhere close to teams with more powerful trading tools, for want of a better word.
It's very hard.
I just don't think that that's possible. I mean, you know, I've said this over and over, but if the Dolphins do not trade down, I'll be staggered. They're looking for players. They've got about 31 spots to fill, maybe 28. Eight now with the three guys today: Ricardo Luiz, the Brazilian fella, and Joe Ranallia. You know, we've got what, six draft picks. They are looking for picks, and they're looking for players, and they're looking to load up for next year as well. I suspect that will be, because actually, really, the strength of this draft, unless somebody like Ed Oliver falls, maybe Juwan Taylor, but the strength of that draft is in the 20 to sort of 55 area. You get yourself some extra capital in that area, plus something else next year. And you're cooking on gas, I think. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not beyond the realms of possibility to move down and get a Bradbury or a Risner or, any of these guys. You enter that safety department. There's corners. There's players all over the place. You know, and you can get a couple of extra second rounders, and there's Collier and there's Bonogu and there's, you know, Gardner Johnson and whoever. To me, that feels like the play. And I just don't feel like Kyler Murray is ever going to be in play for the Dolphins.
Now let me ask you some. Let me ask both of you something, because I don't think that I've gotten you on record on this. You asked me about Russell Wilson, Simon. What are you prepared to trade if he became available to you?
I think the three first rounders is a decent. This is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. This is a guy who's one throw and essentially one missed block away from winning multiple Super Bowls. I mean, you'd already have an argument as to whether or not he's a Hall of Fame player. He's currently probably a Hall of Incredibly Good and on the verge. You look at that offensive line in Seattle, it perennially has been bad. You know, he gets knocked over all the time. The run game has been okay, but look at the quality or lack thereof of receiving talent. I mean, look at the lack of receivers that, you know, look at the receiving talent that he had when they lost on the final play of the game against New England. I mean, we are talking about, you know, Doug Baldwin aside, not a great group whatsoever. And I think, you know, certainly friends of mine and I discuss regularly how John Schneider and Pete Carroll have essentially, what's a kind way of putting this, I'm slightly reneged on giving Wilson the sort of talent that would push him over the top in terms of getting more Super Bowl wins. Even when that defense was very, very good, They had an opportunity to bring in more talent, and they did with Jimmy Graham. But they, Doug Baldwin is their number one receiver, and he's a really nice player. But he's nothing, and the kind of whole, he's a number one, he's a number two, that thing has slightly dissipated over the years. But he's still, most teams would not go into battle with Doug Baldwin as their number one guy.
And they lost their promising tight end, Disley, early in the season.
Exactly.
And it wasn't like he had, much help past Doug Baldwin. It was just basically Doug Baldwin. That was
Wilson's played behind some incredible offensive linemen. Look at George Fant, for example. Fant was a guy incredibly bad, but he was playing left tackle, hadn't played college football, played high school football. Mm-hmm. Here he was starting the NFL, left tackle, protecting one of the four or five best quarterbacks in football. It's astonishing to me. Really, it's astonishing to me. He is an elite player. There are issues. You wonder, and it speaks to a little bit to Tyler Dunn's piece in Bleacher Report, which about Aaron Rodgers, which Rodgers has vehemently kicked back at in the last hour or two. Quarterbacks are, professional sports people are a different breed, aren't they? Quarterbacks, I think, an even more different breed, and I think they're probably quite myopic in terms of the way they deal. You look at Ben Roethlisberger, and they keep Ryan Tannehill. They keep themselves to themselves. They're very individual, I suppose. They are the leaders of the team. They are the ones that the team and the fan base live and die upon. And I suspect Wilson is different, in inverted commas, to everybody else. But to me, he's an elite player, and you give up three first rounders for him.
Breaking news, though, real quick, and I don't want to spend much time on it, but the Miami Dolphins have also signed from the San Antonio Commanders, same team, Tyrone Holmes. If you remember him as a pass rusher coming out with the Jacksonville Jaguars in the sixth round, somebody that Marion Hobby might be familiar with.
So what you're saying is that the AAF succeeded in their mission. They just went out of business.
Yeah.
Because their players are showing up all over the place now.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
He has played NFL games, just like Jayron Elliott. He has played in NFL games. Tyrone Holmes has. And just like Jayron Elliott, he had a ludicrous pressure rate this year in the AAF. So another pure pass rusher presence that Miami has signed ahead of the draft to sort of get some bodies in there, because clearly who's the pass rush presence other than Charles Harris?
Charles Harris.
When Charles Harris is the guy and you're looking for another guy, then you're in deep trouble. Yeah. this roster, man, this is one of the worst rosters I've seen in a long, long time.
It's that there are certain parts of it that are just black holes.
look, quarterback, pretty bad. It's probably the worst in the league.
Yeah.
Running back is another issue that, there was a Sports Illustrated report that they ranked the units. We were 32nd in terms of the strength of our running back group.
Yeah, that was complete bullshit, I thought.
Well, except is it, though? We can talk about Drake. But, is it, though? Again, look how bad our offensive line is.
Say it again. Yes,
it's bullshit.
I'm not sure it is, actually. We lost Frank Gore.
32nd is not accurate.
No, it's not. But it's pretty low. It's pretty low. Because we can talk about how much we like Kenyon Drake. But
32nd is the worst in the league. Kenyon Drake and Kalen Ballage are not the worst in the league.
Well, no, worst unit in the league. Not talking about worst backs in the league. We have talked about what Kenyon Drake can do, but surely at some point the rubber's got to meet the road, right? He's actually got to turn exciting potential into actual real-time performance on a consistent basis. Fair?
Yeah, I agree with that, but he needs the opportunities because,
of course,
he produces with it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see. Offensive line's an absolute fucking car crash. Absolute fucking car crash.
That unit is absolutely 32nd.
The two trenches are an absolute disgrace.
Yes, and that defensive line is absolutely somewhere around that 32nd mark.
Yeah, the linebacker group is interesting. It was interesting to hear Raekwon McMillan talk about how he's been told to study Dont'a Hightower. Obviously, secondary is pretty decent and would stack up pretty well against most secondaries in the league. You're one or two players missing, but generally, I mean, crikey, it's a bad roster. Anyway, we will get to that in time. There'll be months of that to come where we will pontificate about the roster and somebody can complain about the gap in my teeth. Anyway, it's time for us to go to break. When we come back, we will analyze both offensive and defensive lines for the draft. We'll dig out some players that we like, that is worth keeping an eye on, and it will be fun. And we'll probably have at least three or four of them playing on our team next season, because God knows we need them. Anyway, first, this.
You're listening to the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've created a menu of intelligent and entertaining content on demand for commutes, workouts, and more. And by now, you're already familiar with the 15 different podcasts in our network. Today, we are proud to announce the premiere of our brand new website, 5ReasonSports.com. On it, you'll find columns from more than a dozen of our hosts, many who are professional writers in the market. Watch original videos from shows like Miami Heat Beat and Balls Cast. Browse our full merchandise shop. And unlike other outlets in the area, there's no paywall. Everything is absolutely free. All of this from a network that's credentialed from all 5 major sports teams in South Florida. Oh yeah, did we mention that it's free? We're by Miami for Miami. We're sports on your schedule. We're Miami Sports On Demand. We're the 5 Reasons Sports Network. Go to 5ReasonSports.com today.
Hi, this is Craig Mish from Swings and Mishes here on the 5 Reasons Podcast Network. Just in case you missed any of our podcasts in the past, here's what you missed.
We have been extremely aggressive in trying to acquire additional international dollars, not just for, you know, potential free agents with 2 first names. It's nice that ownership is fully supportive and allowing us to do everything in our power to be the best team in this region, in the gateway to America, and for Miami to become a destination spot for all Latin players, because, you know, this is such an international city.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Simon Clancy, the one with the tooth cap. Joining me, as always, Alfredo Arteaga and Chris Kaufman. Boys, let's get started. Offensive line in the draft. Let's go outside to in. Tackles. Who do we like? Who don't we like? Who do we kind of feel like fits what we're looking for? Obviously, we have Laramie Tunsil, what we think is a kind of all-pro potential player. One of the best 4, 5, 6 tackles in the league. But obviously, no more Juwan James, right tackle an issue. You really don't want to be starting Jesse Davis there, especially with a 59-year-old quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick. It feels like an opportunity, if we are looking at 2020 for a quarterback, to actually bed in some talent on that offensive line so they have a year together before a new quarterback starts in a year's time. What do we think about, I mean, tackle-wise, Juwan Taylor, Andre Dillard looks like the best pure pass protector. Jonah Williams obviously can play either tackle spot, guard. You've got Dalton Risner who can play probably all 5 spots along the line. Ty Howard. There's a decent class of tackles, even down into the Josh Miles and people like that, Pipkins, those sort of guys, and you know, probably third day guys and free agent guys. What do we think, boys? What are we looking at?
I think there's 2 guys that are absolutely perfect fits, but the problem with them is the asset that you're going to have to use to get them, and that's Juwan Taylor, Dalton Risner. Juwan Taylor, you're going to have to use 13 if you want him. And I don't know if that's enough, because there's a couple of teams ahead of them, namely the Texas Jaguars, that could be in on him big.
Buffalo Bills are another. I don't think he makes it to 13, I've got to say.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you want him, you're going to have to use 13. And how do you explain to your fan base that you just, you know, you let Juwan James go? No matter what we think about him, yes, he was expensive. Denver paid him a lot of money. But you let a right tackle go that you were kind of happy with, and now you're going to use the 13th pick in the draft on another right tackle? You know, I think that's pretty hard to sell So, yeah, we all agree that they're going to have to try to trade down. But if they trade down into the 20s, I could see, like, a Dalton Risner makes perfect sense in there. So,
I mean, Dillard to me is the best pure left tackle. It's the best pass-protecting left tackle in the draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like Taylor.
I'm operating on the assumption that Laremy Tunsil is our guy for the next
team. Yeah, exactly. I don't think we need Dillard. So, yeah. That, like you said, that brings into play some of those guys. What about Jonah Williams? Because you could play him at left guard. You could. I mean, I think he's a more than serviceable left tackle anyway.
Yeah.
You can also play him at right tackle. I spoke to him in preseason. Just a guy who absolutely loves football. Is going to get a high grade in terms of his intelligence and his on the board work. Obviously, played at a very high level in the SEC. Would you draft him? Because he kind of feels like he's in that sort of 13 to 23 kind of area. He's sort of slipped a little bit, I suppose, not through any fault of his own necessarily, just from a couple of our players kind of rising. But he's been one of those solid players over the, you know, he was a right tackle and then kicked across to the left side this season. Didn't disappoint, didn't let anybody down.
Yeah, I would absolutely draft him for, let's say, the only reason I wouldn't is basically not his fault. It's the fault of whoever's building this roster, because I think an edge player, defensive lineman, is much more important than a guard. So I wouldn't want to use the asset that I would need to use to get a Jonah Williams.
What about big Cody Ford of Oklahoma?
Now that's interesting. I like the Oklahoma left tackle. I'm wondering whether he can, is Bobby Evans.
Bobby Evans, wondering if
he can play right tackle because he's played it before. So yeah, like I'm not really into using any of our top 50 picks because on a tackle or a guard, because good God, we need help everywhere else. And I think we're just going to have to punt on a high pick on the offensive line, at least this year.
I mean, the interesting thing is with the Patriots, certainly, apart from, I suppose, Nate Solder and Logan Mankins, I can't think of too many high picks.
Well, they took the Georgia left tackle last year.
Yeah, Isaiah Wynn. But beyond that, I can't think of too many players over the years in the Belichick era, and certainly the era that Flores and Chad O'Shea have been there. They've, you know, what they've done is turn over and find really good players in the mid to late areas. Obviously, Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, is a genius. But, you know, you look at a Marcus Cannon, you look at a David Andrews, you look at some of those guys that they've had playing guard. Look what they did with Trent Brown last year. I mean, not without talent, but, you know, his performance, certainly the playoffs where he didn't even give up pressure, is, you know, says it all really in the contract he obviously got with the Raiders. It feels like all of a sudden you're looking a little bit further down, and, you know, Alabama is a team that Belichick has always liked. Stanford, again, is a team that, you know, they're the kind of the core teams, and you look at some of those players. What about a guy like Yodney Cajuste, who came into the local pro day last Friday, tore his pec, I think, in a workout a few weeks ago. But the West Virginia left tackle, could you boys see him kicking across to the right side? Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Yodney Cajuste could play right tackle, but I mean, really, I'd want to give him a crack at left tackle first, because I think he might be good enough for it, and that's where his best value is going to. It's kind of a weird class altogether, because when Andre Dillard is, you know, as you say, is possibly the best pure left tackle in the draft, then it's a bad tackle draft to me. I look at guys like Juwan Taylor as. And I mean, Juwan Taylor is the best offensive lineman in the draft, or the best tackle in the draft anyway, and he's been a pure right tackle with Florida, so that kind of says how weird and kitschy of a class it is. When he would have to be moved over to left tackle, you've got a guy in Chuma Edoga, who we all like, of USC, who could be moved over to left tackle. He's played well enough to do it, but he was a right tackle at USC, and I think that he might actually be up there with Juwan Taylor as among the best tackles in the draft. So it's just a very strange class, and a guy like you're talking about Jonah Williams, who's probably going to have to move inside to left guard. I think, you know, that it's emblematic of this draft. I actually like the guys, you know, I like Juwan Taylor quite a bit, and I think he's slide right in and replace Juwan James easily at right tackle.
Absolutely.
And you'd be fine. As you say, he's not even going to make it a 13. Forget that, you know, the trade down issue. He's not even going to make it to 13. He's going to go way before our pick. So already you're kind of on different guys. You're on later guys. And that's where I think there's some value. I actually liked some of these guys later on in the draft. As I mentioned, Chuma Edoga and Yadni Kajust. And Titus Howard of Alabama State is another one that showed up at the Senior Bowl and just owned everybody, really.
The McGarry kid at Washington is another one.
Yeah, Caleb McGarry played right tackle at the Senior Bowl. He played it pretty well. I thought Titus Howard, particularly he stole Zach Allen's soul during the game, and he had pro football focus kind of graded everybody's individual, like their offensive line versus defensive line drills, where they do the pit drills during the week of practice. And Howard had the highest win rate of all of the offensive linemen, period. And he was a compelling small school guy. And I think that that's actually a theme when you look at the offensive linemen in general and the offensive tackles, is the small school guys are kind of showing up there. Because I think that there are other small school guys, and particularly in the interior, like if you look at Josh Miles of Morgan State, and Nate Davis of Charlotte, they're sort of really, really compelling. And sort of some guys that you hadn't really heard of until the Senior Bowl, all of a sudden, like Chuma Edoga, even though he's not a small school, still, I think that some of those guys are really compelling. So first round, not necessary, not a good tackle class for it anyway. But you can get some guys, later on. And I've got definitely Edoga, Howard, and Kajus targeted. I wouldn't be averse to guys like McGarry or Simon. You've talked about Dennis Daly.
South Carolina kid, yeah.
Right, and possibly Tyler Jones. I know that Ethan Greenidge is another guy that I've looked at Villanova, who might get drafted, might not get drafted. If he doesn't get drafted, to me, he's a no-brainer as a UDFA.
Free agent, yeah.
He's got the body for it. But yeah, those are some guys that you can really play there, and I would look forward to seeing what they've got.
Matt Sharping is another. I mean, Barry Jackson just reporting now that the Dolphins are signing 4 San Antonio Commanders players. two unnamed players, plus Elliott and Holmes. So we are fast becoming the new home for the defunct San Antonio Commanders.
Like I said, the AAF succeeded in their mission. They just went out of business.
I wonder who the other guys are, because
there's a couple of nose tackles there who played for Jacksonville. Richard Ivey maybe was with the Jaguars for a couple of seasons on the practice squad. I wonder if he might be one of the guys. Just Flaherty, the connection there, maybe. Hobby, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
When I was watching them.
Let's flip to the interior and the guards and the centers. Let's start with the guards. And I suppose it starts, we've talked about Williams. We've talked about Cody Ford a little bit, who can kick inside. In terms of the pure guards, Chris Lindstrom of Boston College is obviously a guy that the Dolphins like an awful lot. Barry Jackson reporting that we'd met him on 3 separate occasions. And we sent Pat Flaherty to work him out as well. Then you've got guys like, let's throw them all in together. But obviously the kid I really like at NC State, Garrett Bradbury. We've got Eric McCoy at Texas A&M. He looks like he'll end, certainly listening to Petey King today. Feels like he's going to go in the first round. You've got a couple of Michaels, Jordan and Dieter, the Wisconsin kid. Dieter, who I certainly think could, as a plug-and-play starter. You look at guys like Connor McGovern. Chris, you talked about Nate Davis earlier on. You've got the kid at Alabama, Pierce Backer, and Bo Benchfrazel at Wisconsin, all the way down to, you look at someone like Alex Bars of Notre Dame, who looks like a good player, got injured halfway through the season, has played right tackles, played inside at guard. In fact, was the replacement for Quentin Nelson and played very well. You look at his tape against Rashan Gary earlier in the season, the first game of the season against Michigan, and he certainly held up very well. Nate Herbig, talk about Stanford. Stanford is a school that the Patriots certainly like to go to the well at. Excuse me. And you could absolutely see that being a guy. And then, the Oklahoma guys, we talked about the exterior guys, but Drew Samir, Ben Powers, there's some talent on the inside where you can, you can find a guy or two, because God knows we need a guy or two that can, Venzel Bulware of Miami, he was at the local pro day, the Frohold kid at Arkansas. There's talent, way down to the into the third day. And you know, even Garrett Brumfield, who I liked earlier in the season at LSU, you watch his tape against Gerald Willis, another guy I really liked from the U. I mean, he was, you know, he's a road grader in the run game, but there's some talent out there depending on what you like. Mm.
Yeah, one guy that I really find interesting in one respect, and that's the little respect that he gets. I think his tape is pretty damn good, and that's Lamont Gaillard. As far as a center, there is no draft board anywhere that has him higher than the fourth rated center, which means he's a fifth round pick or beyond.
Yeah, he's scrappy. He's strong but scrappy. I mean, the guy that I haven't mentioned is the kid. Yeah.
Short stout. You know,
the kid at Mississippi State as well, Elgton Jenkins, is another guy. You know, you could see second, third round area for him. You know, but you come away with a Bradbury, a McCoy, or a Jenkins, and you know, you look like you might be set for 10 years in the middle, certainly. And then, you know, Gaillard is a guy that could, you know, depending on what you need, depending on what scheme you're going to run. And really, we don't know if we're running a 3-4 defense. We don't know offensively. We know nothing at the moment. We really don't, you know. So we don't know. Are we running zone? Are we running – what are we running offensively? So, I mean, obviously that picture will begin to clear a little bit, you know, when we look at the guys that we draft. But, you know, it's fascinating to see how it's going to play out. But it kind of feels like we're going to add probably two offensive linemen and then a bunch of guys undrafted free agents, doesn't it? Because there's a lot of spots up for grabs.
Depending on what they've done with the AAF and, you know, who they've added
San Antonio.
Yes.
Yeah, because apparently we've added the entire team. So, you know, depending on what we've done there, I think that I figured it out on the 90-man roster, they probably need about if they haven't signed Michael Dunn, I'm not sure if they have or not. They need like 7 or 8 guys, offensive linemen. So, you know, they're going to draft 2. And I imagine that there's going to be a whole lot more UDFAs. And so we'll see. Lamont Gaillard is interesting. I would have him. I think
Gilliard,
you know, actually, is my fourth.
It's Gilliard, actually, I think. Lamont Gilliard.
Is it? Is it really? Is it Gilliard?
Yeah, Gilliard. I didn't know how you pronounce his name. Yeah, that's good.
Lamont Gilliard. If he were to be taken by the Dolphins, he is legitimately one of my favorite centers. It's just very hard for me to get beyond Garrett Bradbury and Eric McCoy when you have an opportunity to get one of those two, or Dalton Risner for that matter. Can play center. When you have an opportunity to get somebody at an increasingly important position in the NFL, that has the kind of skill, the kind of athleticism that those guys have, I think you do have to, don't you have to jump on it? Don't you have to make sure that you come away with Bradbury or McCoy or Risner or, you
Definitely.
Know, I think that they're just so good. I go back and forth between McCoy and Bradbury personally on which one is actually better. I think McCoy had a great Senior Bowl game. Bradbury was no slouch, certainly either. They're both very athletic.
I think Bradbury's a bit more finesse, isn't he? Whereas McCoy is going to smash you in the mouth a little bit.
Right.
You know, you're looking for with Bradbury. If you're looking for a guy that's
they're both nice.
Yeah, they're both nice. But Bradbury's the guy that can get out, there's reach blocks, and get. You know, it's rare to see a center that can do what he does in terms of that quickness, getting out in front and just getting in position and then turning his body. I mean, he does an astonishing job, really, of doing that. But you know, like you say, Chris, I think they're 1 and 1A, and you know, you could toss a coin as to which one's 1 and which one's 1A. Barry says that we're signing a cornerback and a receiver from the San Antonio Commanders. So while we continue to talk and kick onto the defensive line, I will just have a look.
By the end of the podcast, we're going to have the San Antonio Commanders here in Miami.
So the wide receivers for the San Antonio Josh Commanders. Stewart. Where are we? DeMarcus Ayers, John Diaz, Darius Prince, and Greg Ward. I reckon it might be Darius Prince.
We have McKay is one of those. Alonzo Moore. Josh Stewart, I remember.
Now, let me ask you guys about another
wasn't
guy.
He, wasn't he an Alabama guy?
I bet you they're signing Zach Sanchez. He was the Nebraska kid, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Oklahoma kid, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Sanchez. Oh, yeah. The corner?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, let me ask you guys about a guy that, you know, we didn't mention when we were talking about the tackles, but he's kind of interesting in the sense that he looked good at the combine, just didn't put up you know, many good numbers, but that's Greg Little out of Mississippi. Where does he play in the NFL? Is he going to be a left tackle or is he a guard?
I think he's not. I don't think he's a guard. I think he needs a year in the weight room. I don't think he's particularly strong. That would be my concern, certainly. You know, having watched him, I think he's a, I think he's a fascinating player, but he does not look like a guy who's going to come in and play from the get-go, because I just don't think he's physically strong enough to do so. And that's, you know, there's a huge step up in strength. You know, this is a guy that just looks like he needs some time in the weight room. I mean, he's got the size, the length, you know, he's quick. He's a real quick mover. You know, he looks like he can, he looks like he can work in multiple schemes. And I think he's an excellent pass protector, but I just think that sometimes he tends to bend a little bit too much at the waist and sort of gets off balance. And I kind of feel like it's a strength issue because he just doesn't trust his ability to keep people at bay with that kind of punch, you know, that really jolt a defensive end. And I think he sort of tends to lean in and, you know, that would be a concern. I think he probably ends up on the right side, but I think he probably isn't much of a contributor in year one because I just don't think he's strong enough.
I would, you know, I couldn't say it any better. I mean, honestly, he just never stood out to me as a strong talent personally.
Feels like to me he ends up in the fourth round area.
Preferences are more for that strong, you know, people mover type. I don't know, but I just don't see it.
Interesting little tidbit about Greg Little. In 2016, he was a top five recruit in the nation. Mm-hmm. He had a teammate, Bobby Evans. The quarterback on his Allen, Texas team was Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray, yeah.
And you know who was the top recruit over the other two guys? This guy, Greg Little. So that's – it shows you what rivals and all those star – those little star designations that they give to these high school prospects, what they really do mean in the end.
It's interesting to watch the NFL circle back to those guys, though, too. You know, even though they have had disappointing – college careers one way or another, the NFL does have a tendency to circle back to them and say, you know, hey, I want to see what you can do, maybe if we get you some different coaching or get you in a different situation. So maybe they're thinking that, but I'm not there on him.
Let's flip to the other side of the ball then. Let's look at defensive line. And, it is a fairly transcendent draft in terms of talent. You are looking at guys that you'll get in the second round who most years you get in the first. I'll flip that down. Guys that you'll get in the third and fourth, you'd normally get in the second and third. Mm-hmm. The guys at the top end, the Nick Bosas, the Josh Allens, the Quinnen Williamses, I think we can pretty much eradicate them unless we have a Larry Tunsil type situation. There has been, and again, it goes back to the old smoke machine, but there has been rumours about Ed Oliver, some off-field issues. You know, we certainly saw him, you know, he announced before the start of the season that he wasn't going to play or that he was going to declare for the draft. He got an injury, and some at Houston queried just how serious that injury was or whether or not he was protecting his assets. Then there was the kind of meltdown that he had with Major Applewhite on the sidelines towards the end of the season, where he was in a team-sanctioned coat and he was asked to remove it because it was supposed to be for one of the players, and he got right in his coach's face. The flip side is he's a phenomenal talent. You know, and he's a guy that if he was there at 13, you'd feel like you'd sprint up to the podium to hand in the card. Then there are, you know, you look at this, the Clemson guys, you know, Marion Hobby's going to know Christian Wilkins, just a great human being, a player that's got better and better and better over the 4 years. With Dexter Lawrence, and we're crying out for that kind of skill set that Lawrence possesses. Cleveland Ferrell, I'm not a massive fan of Ferrell, but, you know, I'm also not a massive fan of Montez Sweat or Brian Burns. I think there's issues with all three of them, but they are there in the mix in terms of players that the Dolphins will be looking at. There is just a vast array of talent right the way down. The second, we talked about Collier, Bonogu, and Charles Omenihu, and there is Rashan Gary and Chase Winovich. There is just an absolute fool's gold of talent here in this defensive line in this draft, isn't there? And again, much like the offensive line, you kind of figure like the Dolphins are going to be coming away with two or three of them because that's really what they need. Who do we like, boys? Give the people a bit of a flavor.
Well, I think that it's kind of obvious. We talked about it a lot in this podcast, and that's that they want to trade down. But if there's a guy in this draft that could fall to 13, besides the obvious, some by miracle of God that Kyler Murray gets to 13. If there's a guy that could get there and change my mind about trading down to get more assets, that's Ed Oliver. He falls to 13. I just take him blindly. And I'm not really hoping for the best because I know what the best can be. Like, I'm not going to call him a sure thing because he's not. I believe the only sure thing in this draft is probably Nick Bosa. You know, if there's another guy, you guys could let me know. But Ed Oliver, my God, he could be one of those transcendent talents. So he's one of the few guys in this draft that I would not trade out of the position for, and I would just take at 13. Mm. So Ed Oliver, obviously, I like all the Clemson guys, all of them, including Cleveland Farrell. The only thing I would not use 13 on Cleveland Farrell. No. I would use it on Christian Wilkins if I didn't get a good offer to trade down, but he's not on my list of those guys that I wouldn't trade the pick for. And once you get into the second, third round, like, there's going to be a lot to like.
Yeah.
Gerald Willis out of Miami, has Dalen Mack hurt himself enough where he's a guy we can take in the fourth round and just plug in as a day one contributor?
I'm still not that interested in him, to be honest.
Really? I mean, for me, this, in the fourth round?
No, for me, this past Tristan Hill, Kalen Saunders, players that I just I find more intriguing.
Greg Gaines.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And same with defensive end. You look at someone like Jacki Polite. He's a kid who's had some issues with, the way that he dealt with the interview. You throw on his tape, there are not many defensive ends. In fact, I would hazard to say, apart from Nick Bosa and Josh Allen, defensive end slash outside linebacker, there are not defensive ends in this draft, apart from those two, who have the tape that Jacki Polite does. And if you end up, if you end up finding him in the second or third round, and you can get him straight, this is a kid with real advanced NFL talent in terms of the way he uses his hands.
And it's setting up for us, to be honest with you, because he's had a disaster of an offseason.
I mean, you just look at some of the reports. He was a good guy off the field. He was well-liked by his teammates. There was some maturity and accountability. But, not everybody at age 17, 18, 19 in the national spotlight can handle it as well as Chase Winovich can. Do you know what I mean? Not everybody is that way inclined. It takes some of us a little bit more to get to mature than it does others. He is a very, very good talent. He has got great hands. He's a really good player. But then you look at, a guy like Zach Allen, kind of feels like a Patriots, now Dolphins type player. Jalen Ferguson, a guy the Dolphins have been interested in. Ashaan Ximenes, the old Dominion defensive end. He was in Miami at the facility yesterday. Justin Hollins was there today, the Oregon kid. I mean, this draft is absolutely loaded at the position, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, even on day three, you look at guys like Anthony Nelson and Jalen Jelk. I mean, there's talent. Max Crosby, a kid that we've apparently shown quite a lot of significant interest in, the Eastern Michigan kid.
And podcast favorite, Porter Gustin.
Absolutely, Porter Gustin. And as Chris said, I know. I mean, where does it stop? LJ Collier, where does it stop? There is absolutely some filthy talent there. I mean,
well, that's good because we probably need every single one of them.
Absolutely.
Well, this is another reason that it sort of makes sense to me, that where you can get some defensive line talent in a lot of different stages of this draft. And what have we got? Daniel Kilgore at center, and we've got maybe Garrett Bradbury or Eric McCoy sitting on the board at some early stage in the draft, and you're just like, well, maybe we can go ahead and focus on the defensive line a little bit later on. And there are some defensive talent. I mean, there are some decent defensive players on the team, just not at pass rusher until we imported the entire San Antonio Commanders unit onto our team. So at defensive tackle, we talk about Jeffrey Simmons a lot.
I was going to say, I've not even mentioned Jeffrey Simmons.
That's the guy we haven't even mentioned yet, and that's the elephant in the room, I think, especially if you're not committed to winning in 2019, but you are committed to rebuilding and being a good team in the future. Certainly that's a guy that you could look at. I know that there are some issues there. People are going to have their own feelings about that tape of him as a senior, and all your feels are perfectly okay. Trust me, on that. But he's a talent. He's an NFL talent. He is going to make a lot of plays at the next level. And
top five guy, isn't he, really? Yeah. Top five to eight guy in the entire draft. And
in the entire
talk about in the entire draft, not just his position, in the entire draft. Right, and I watched a documentary. I watched a documentary on him the other day, and this is a kid who made a terrible mistake, a terrible error, a terrible whatever you want to call it. But by God, has he worked hard to turn his life around. He is a stand-up, standout human being. And it doesn't denigrate from the terrible act that he committed as a senior in high school. But he owns up to everything that he did, and boy, did he turn it around. I mean, he's become an honor roll student, a team captain. I mean, he is a mentor. He is just a brilliant human being. The other kid who fits really well schematically with what we do, because he can play inside and outside, is Jerry Tillery of Notre Dame, and another guy we haven't mentioned at all. I mean, this it's impossible to... You know, to think that you couldn't come away with two or three, you know, legitimate starting players from this draft.
He reminds me a bit of Lawrence Guy, who plays for New England.
Definitely.
Probably reminds some people of Jared Odrick as well, if you go back in time a little. I think that another guy that to mention that needs to be mentioned just because of how prolific he was is Draymond Jones of Ohio State. Mm. He's sort of an undersized defensive tackle who is a prolific pass rusher from that defensive tackle position. And that's what you're looking for. This is a guy that can play defensive end on a lot of downs for you and then reduce inside to defensive. And he's so quick on the inside. He is quicker than everybody else out there, regardless of what he times and all of that stuff. He is a very quick player. He is a mismatch on guards. He is going to get pass rush from the interior and be able to play on the outside a lot like LJ Collier, another guy from TCU, about the same size, about the same athletic profile, by the way, an athletic profile that the New England coaches would find attractive. And he's another guy. He showed up the senior, I mentioned before, the Pro Football Focus grading of Senior Bowl practices. No pass rusher had the sort of success rate in the Senior Bowl practices that LJ Collier did. So he was not only dominant in a lot of games until he met Yadni Kajust, but in a lot of games for TCU, he was dominant in the Senior Bowl as well. He showed up, guys that are supposed to be good blockers, and they just could not block him. And he did it in the game too. I mean, he did it. He really did a great job in the game. He forced a fumble. Jarrett Stidham fumble was him. He was a good player at TCU, a good player in the Senior Bowl, just a knockout all around player that I think fits Miami like a glove. And Draymond Jones, LJ Collier, you're looking at two players that Charles Omenihu, to bring it back to him. I don't know if he's exactly the same kind of player as Draymond Jones or LJ Collier, but he is a player that would fit Miami and be able to be a pass rush presence and an overall presence on the outside, purely on the outside.
If you're new to this scouting thing, if you haven't seen these players, go back and watch the TCU game for Draymond Jones, because in the second half, he absolutely dominates that game. He takes over that game. I mean, Dwayne Haskins, Paris Campbell, offensively, are the ones that make the difference. But defensively, Draymond Jones, there's a period of about 10 minutes where he's just everywhere. It was one of the best performances you'll see all season. And rushing interior, exterior, in terms of playing defensive and reducing inside, it was a really good performance.
Let me ask you guys about one guy in particular who I think the hype has gone cold on as of late. And that's Rashawn Gary. What do you think of him at 13, Simon? Because as the days go by, it seems to me that not Dolphin Twitter, but Draft Twitter keeps finding reasons to keep passing up on this guy that high.
He's an athletic freak. He is the high school number one high school player. He is just one of those Planet Theory type guys in terms of just the skill set. I mean, I met him, had a long conversation with him in Schembechler Hall last year. He has hands like shovels. He's a great kid. He has always been blessed with greatness. I mean, they always knew that he was going to be special. And yet, injuries, some people have said Don Brown's scheme didn't particularly suit what his skill set was. He loves football. He is he runs like the wind, especially at his size. I mean, he's a physical beast, but I just don't see the production on tape. And Brian Baldinger had a fascinating video the other day showing him coming off the edge. And you know, he will get under you. He will get, you know, accelerate off the snap. And then when it comes to actually clicking and closing in terms of just once you got under and then driving to the quarterback, for some reason, he just fell off. And to me, on tape, Chase Winovich was significantly the better player. He didn't have Gary's, you know, he had a much harder route to get to the to get to where he got. And he was a linebacker, switched to tight end, played special teams. It finally added 15 pounds playing defensive end. To me, I would be drafting Chase Winovich over Rashan Gary.
Also very gifted himself, though.
Absolutely.
Athletically, he is a compelling player.
100%.
Stack him up. From a spark standpoint and all that, like,
and another great human being for which there is more to life after football. I mean, absolutely.
About Rashan Gary, I will say this, and I realize the production thing is not there, and exactly what Baldinger describes is exactly what bothers me whenever I watch him. Mm-hmm. Is you see he's doing it all right, and then when it comes to finishing, you know, against the blocker, he's got the right leverage and everything. It just doesn't happen for some reason, but he does. The thing that I would focus on, if say he was a Miami Dolphin, is the fact that he makes plays for you, or he helps your defense in a lot of different ways, not just one way. And if it was just the one way with that, you know, ultra sack production, then everybody would be more comfortable, right? They'd be like, oh yeah, he's got 20 sacks, of course. But, you know, he makes plays for you as a defense and helps you win on a lot of downs in a lot of different ways. And he does it because he's an athletic freak and because he's a good overall football player. I think if people wouldn't criticize him as much if he weren't such an athletic freak, you know, if he weren't such an athletic freak, then I think people would say, oh, this is good. This is a really good player. This is an underrated player. But because he is an athletic freak, they, you know, the tide goes the other way on him. And I would still be happy to have him on my team. I think you're going to be happy. He's going to make a lot of plays for you on a lot of different downs and a lot of different ways, and you'll be happy to have him.
You can certainly use him creatively, can't you? One last thing before we get out of here, because it's like 3 o'clock in the morning or some shit here. Which is the number one defensive lineman in college football, draft eligible defensive lineman, who made more plays 20 plus yards down the field in terms of chasing plays down? Who is that player? We have talked about him. Wow. One defensive lineman who made more plays than any other draft eligible player, 20 plus yards down the field.
Ed Oliver.
It should be Ed Oliver because he could run.
He's in the top three.
It's not Quinnen Williams, is it?
It's not. It's Chase Winovich.
Winovich. Yeah.
Which just adds to the compelling nature of his talent.
Yeah, he's really good. You almost go. You wonder about in Miami's system where you're trying to think of. We get trapped in this, right? We're looking for New England comparables, right? Right. And so, okay, well, Chase Winovich, he's not really a Trey Flowers, right? I don't think he's going to pass rush on the inside.
Could be Kyle Van Noy, though.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, is he that? Is he going to convert to a real linebacker? If you are figuring him to do that, is that a little bit chancy? You know. Having him do something that's not very similar to what he's already done before.
All-state linebacker in high school.
Yeah. Mm. Well, was it all-state linebacker?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He was a four-star recruit as a linebacker.
All right. Well,
I mean, he was recruited to go to Ohio State and turned them down to go to Michigan.
Shows so you how much I keep track of high school players.
He was heftily recruited. Anyway, let's get out of here. We should be back. I mean, how many was it? 16 days to go to the draft now. It's getting it's getting excited. So we haven't arranged our plans for draft week, but no doubt we shall have multiple podcasts that week. So look out for them. Thanks for listening to Chris, to Alf, and to the gap-toothed English fella that everybody hates. And we shall see you in 7 days. Fuck off, all of you, frankly, because I don't care. See you, especially the fat fella. You can definitely fuck off. See you in 7 days.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.